My name is Keith Wells, and I'll be talking to you about how these Washington, D.C. school-based screening STD program improves the health of adolescents in a non-clinical setting. I have with me my co-author, Daniel Neji Alab, and also we had my other colleague or co-author, Minerva Lazo, who had to leave on an emergency today or yesterday. But I just wanted to mention her as well. Danielle will be assisting me as well during the question and answer period. By the end of the presentation, the presenter has no disclosures to any financial relationships with the commercial interests. Okay. By the end of the presentation, the participants will be able to list three reasons why the District of Columbia began their school-based STD screening program, discuss ways the school-based STD screening program staff were able to increase the percentage of infected students who were treated, and identify challenges and successes and best practices of providing STD screening within schools. What is this school-based STD screening program? The school-based STD screening program provides education, which is not comprehensive, screenings for gonorrhea and chlamydia, and treatment within the public high schools in D.C. When we first started, there were approximately, I think we had two school-based, I should say, DCPS programs that had health programs within the DCPS. And I just wanted to mention also, during our presentations, it's generally have three major points that we cover. You can have an STD and be asymptomatic. You can have giving and receiving oral sex. You can get an STD. And having an STD increases your chances to acquiring HIV. The program identifies and reaches students at risk by closing the gaps in screening and treatment. And the services are free and confidential to all participants. In the next slides, I want to mention that we'll be mentioning some of the gaps that we're talking about. This slide talks about the gonorrhea rates and by age and sex in the United States. If you notice, that 15 to 19-year-olds and 20 to 24-year-olds has having the highest rates nationwide. Here for chlamydia rates by age and sex in the United States, again, it's 15 to 19-year-olds and 20 to 24-year-olds having the highest rates. D.C. differs from the national as the 20 to 24-year-olds having the highest rates in the U.S. And we consider youth between the ages 15 to 19 and young adults as 20 to 24-year-olds. So regardless of the sex and the gender, the highest rates of infections are among young adults. So these are the numbers of gonorrhea and chlamydia by age in Washington, D.C. So we mentioned that people 15 to 24-year-olds have more chlamydia and gonorrhea than any others. So this is what it looks like citywide. So where you see 15 to 19-year-olds having the highest rates, which are the youth in D.C., as opposed to seeing nationwide with its young adults. So if you're in this group, age group, between 15 to 24-year-old, you're more likely to be exposed or get infected because if you're having unprotected sex, you're not getting tested on the regular, and because that age group has a larger number of infection rates, you're more likely to be infected with the two most common STDs, which is gonorrhea and chlamydia. Three main reasons the D.C. began the school-based screening program with well-documented barriers to adolescents obtaining quality health care for their sexual health, let alone the sexual health services. Also, explanation of benefits, confidentiality, lack of knowledge about free and confidential services. Also, we see that the lack of school-based health centers in the D.C. public high schools. When we first started, I believe there were only two health suites in the DCPS, and now there's approximately six health services that we see in the school-based screening program and in the schools as well. And lastly, the lack of comprehensive sexual education within the D.C. public school system. The school-based STD screening program timeline. We reached out, in 2006, we reached out to the D.C. Council and seek their political will, which there was a buy-in to get them on board with our program. So they had the political will. The mayor and the city council had the commitment to instill the or to install the or mandated our school-based screening program. We had internal commitment from we reached out to nurses from the Children's National Medical Center who staffed the nursing suites in 2007. We had DOH-wide buy-in. Parents, principals, and teachers as well. They formed an alliance, a senior high alliance, it was called, among the parents, principals, and educators, was headed by Kathy Riley. And also they formed a community health administration, which was specifically a creation of the school-based screening program. In 2008, we piloted our first school-based screening program, which it was in one high school, and I believe it was a charter school. And approximately how many students? I think it was about 1,200 students. And in 2000, and also we had Real Talk, which is text messaging, which provides youth with STD testing sites and condom distribution locations in based on their zip codes area. And then in 2009, we had expansions of 11 schools who approached, and these schools, some of the, as we said, some of them approached us for expanding our program, and we fully implemented it in 2009. And continuing in 2010, we had a full scale. We were implemented with our expanded to full scale where we collaborated. One of our unorthodox collaboration was with Unity Healthcare Services, or Healthcare, who provides staff for the school-based screening program with their providers, and they treat those individuals who are tested positive for gonorrhea and chlamydia. They also provided HIV and pregnancy testing as well. And we piggyback text messaging reminders for students to call in for their results, and we call that the Dr. B's line. And then in 2011, we collaborated with another community-based organization called Metro Teen AIDS. They added peer counseling, which improved it was ongoing comprehensive counseling services for those students who came in who tested positive as well. And then in 2012, with additional text messaging at 3 weeks and in 3 months. And also in 2012, we piloted a program for HIV in one of the schools, the DCPS schools, to see if that was going to be helpful. And actually, we turned out we tested over, 80 students at that school?
Yeah.
And at that particular school. And then in 2013, the HIV testing, and now we're in HIV testing in 10 schools. So this, previously, I should say, we tested 713 students at that time, last year, and 55 of which did not know their HIV status previously, improving their sexual health by normalizing STD and HIV testing. So the screening process, and this is how it works. We present to groups of 20 to 50, maybe 60 students. Sometimes it could be larger, up to about 80 students in one auditorium. The presentations is 20 minutes and not a comprehensive sex education. All students complete a demographic form. And the demographic form asks for communication preference, like phone numbers, text messages, email, etc., and locate information. All students complete the demographic form, and all participating students who are being screened enter the bathroom stall. So once they enter the bathroom stall, they make a decision. They voluntarily decide whether or not they want to submit a urine. This is in order for us to ensure their confidentiality, that they don't have any peer pressure. A lot of times students, my colleague can tell you that we hear students that are whispering to each other that they want to be tested, but they may have a boyfriend sitting behind them, or they may have somebody saying, hey, I don't want to get tested. So this helps kind of alleviate that pressure so they can go and make their own decision in the bathroom, because sometimes we have students coming back to us say, hey, I want to get tested. Can I get tested still? So these are some of the things that we want to make sure their confidentiality is kept. So students are voluntary to decide, as I said, at that time in the restroom. We encourage them to call the Dr. B's phone line in 1 week for the results, and the disease intervention specialist will contact students with the positive results. Students are given three options, either in-school treatment at the Southeast SCD Clinic where we're located, and or the private doctor or community health center. How do we do it? How do we address some of the issues that decrease in the treatment rate of infected students? To address this issue, we switched laboratory providers, which it decreased the turnaround rates of the results from 7 to 14 days to 24 to 48 hours. We augmented the case management by further investigating infected students who weren't interviewed. This helped greatly. I think this really turned around some of our treatment rates of infected students, that following up, we found that following up with students periodically previous to the end of the school year and during the summer months or during the breaks, we ensured that these students were followed up and make sure that they were tested and also treated. In addition, we also offer partner services to all students who tested positive and elicited partners, providing partner notification services to those students. We maintain a list of untreated students who are eventually reassigned for additional follow-up, as I indicated earlier. And to assess the impact of these changes, we analyze the school-based screening STD program data pre- and post-implementation. So this is the treatment process. We have positive students who are identified. The disease intervention specialist, which is a DIS, reached out to the offered treatment options. And if student is not reached in school treatment, is the next options for contact. In-school treatment consisted of calling down students, positive, negatives, and also those who need to be retested to keep the confidentiality. So students are offered treatment at school, and if their sex partners are in the school, he or she will be offered prevention treatment. If they decide to go to the Southeast SCD Clinic, the student is treated at the DOH SCD Clinic. They are fast-tracked, interviewed by one of the DIS, and offer partner services as well. And if they decide to go to their own private doctor, the DIS will follow up with their primary care doctor to confirm treatment. So the next steps, if students are not treated within the first three options, the DIS will call the student again. If the student does not respond, the DIS will conduct a field visit at their home. And if the student does not respond to the field visit, the DIS will call the school nurse at the end of the school year or prior to the end of the school year to verify if the student was located and treated. So barriers to treatment. The student acceptance, the student cooperation, unable to locate. And I want my colleague to kind of chime in here with me, because some of these points that we want to make sure that you understand that some of the student acceptance and student corporations kind of go hand in hand.
Sometimes when a student receives their diagnosis, they're in denial. Based off what type of sexual activity that they're having, some kids do not consider oral sex sex. So they say, I never had sex before. It's impossible that I could have an STD. So we pretty much kind of ask them more detailed questions on their behaviors and what they're doing. So if they don't accept the information, they won't cooperate with us providing treatment. So a lot of times what happens is the parents end up getting involved if the student chooses to tell the parent. So the parent end up taking their own child to their own private doctor for treatment. Sometimes the parent will call us back and say, you're right, my child did have chlamydia and gonorrhea. You know, another thing is students often transfer to different schools within the District of Columbia. Students move away, so it'll be hard to locate them. Their phone numbers, you know, teenagers, they are responsible for their cell phones, so they have to pay their own bill. A lot of times the phone is disconnected. Truancy is an issue. When we try to locate the students in the schools, they're running the hallways, they're not at school, they're hooking school. What else we have here? Students switching specimens. This is not common, but it has happened maybe twice throughout our program, because the students will go in the restroom with their bag. They sit their cups down on the sink, wash their hands, and they're talking and playing. They may accidentally pick up someone else's bag. So that has happened before, where we call a student and they say, there's no way I could have been positive, and then we do further investigation and find out that it was indeed their friend's specimen and not theirs, but that's rare. It's happened, but it doesn't happen all the time. And that's pretty much it for the barriers. Yes.
Okay. All right, we're going to, I know we've got time, so I'm going to go through these really quick. The best practices. One of the things we just wanted to make sure that the students understand, they have free examination and treatment. Everything is voluntarily. Everything is confidential. We use other forms of communications for them. For example, the text messaging, the emailing, and we're exploring new ways like Instagram with students as well. And getting partners treated and interviewed. One of the things, the big thing that we noticed, we want to make sure and point out that although the number of the percentage of cases we interview decrease, the ratio of partner elicited the ratio of the partners elicited per interview increased. So we did have more partners elicited during our interviewing, even though they did decrease. And we also had to follow up with students in a month, then and again in 3 months to retest again at the end of the school year. The school-based screening has screened thousands of students in D.C. We have treated hundreds of infected youth and continue to normalize the STD screening among 14 to 21-year-olds through this program. And this is from 2007 when we started our program to 2014. If you look at the last 4 years, as you see, as I mentioned, those who participated, those who were tested, those infected, and those treated. Those who were infected, as you see here, were 6%. Then it was 6% in 2012 and 13 it was 6%. Then it dropped down to in 2013 and 14 to 4%. And as you see, those who were treated also increased. In our conclusion, We're able to increase the percentage of infected students treated, although the number of percentage of cases interviewed decreased, the ratio of partners elicited per interview increased from 0.34 to 0.50. Normalizing the STD testing among asymptomatic youth, treating those identified as infected, and notifying partners to get tested and treated all help improve the sexual health of this vulnerable population.
And I also want to mention that we started with one school. Now we're at 24 DC public. Actually, we're at every DC public school within DC, and now we have added at least
five
new charter schools, alternative schools to our program.
So we have expanded our program, and this is because based on the success of our program, and charter schools are now, being that it varies with charter schools because they have their own autonomy with health services and with DCPS, they have one central location where we can work easier and with the DCPS schools. But I want to thank special thanks to everyone who contributed to the development of the school-based STD screening program. Our program manager, Veronica Urquila, Yashir Shaw, our program coordinator, Jennifer Johnson, Bruce Furness, our CDC medical epidemiologist, and the District of Columbia Department of Health HIV STD TV program, and the Centers for Disease Control and Unity Healthcare Services, and our partners and community-based agencies. Thank you very much.